Hello there. This is Sheila Lammers with the Vermilion County News, dated Wednesday, October 3rd, 2017. We'll begin today's reading with a few articles from the News Gazette. The first here is called Bressey Tower, Property Sale Not Pleasant for City. The vacant Bressey Tower in downtown Danville has a new owner, a transaction that took the city by surprise, and not a pleasant one. Mayor Scott Eisenhower, who learned of the building's transfer on Saturday, expressed frustration. He said city officials had met with the previous owner's attorney within the last month and discussed the city and taxpayers finally getting reimbursed for the covered pedestrian walkway installed on the south side of the building, which protects people from debris falling off the building, an ongoing concern for the city and Vermilion County, whose county annex is literally attached to Bressey Tower. Eisenhower said they also discussed adding more protections because more terracotta pieces are falling now. At no time was it suggested that they were working on an agreement with a potential new owner of that building, and in fact, the discussion was, as part of the agreement, there would be no transaction of the building without contacting the city first about how these issues would be resolved, Eisenhower said. Now, here we are once again seeing a building with substantial challenges being turned over to a nonprofit organization who we hope has the financial resources to address these concerns immediately, and another corporate entity abusing a building and walk away from it and potentially leave the taxpayers with the costs. The building's new owner, Historic Restoration Incorporated, a nonprofit organization based in Alabama, accepted the century-old office building as a donation from the previous owner, the Forked Group in Kentucky. The transfer was finalized October 3rd. Scotty Porter, executive director of Historic Restoration, based in Fayette, Alabama, said he has not seen the building, but has seen pictures of the exterior and interior provided to him by the previous owner. He says it's structurally sound, but has a crumbling facade. I know it's a public safety issue, Porter said, adding that the number one priority will be to secure funds to pay for the exterior. He said he will be coming to Danville on Thursday to see his new building, which he does have insured through the same provider the previous owner was using. And he's already secured a couple estimates for facade work, about $1.25 million. I'm confident I can raise the money to take care of the terracotta issue quickly, said Porter, adding that with winter approaching, that work couldn't start until spring at the earliest. Porter said he realizes there was tension between the city and previous owner, a huge financial corporation with deep pockets that was getting pressure from city officials because it had available money. But, Porter said, he's the new player now, and he's starting with a clean slate and wants to work with local officials to make sure this building is preserved. Porter said he's committed to beginning Bressey Tower's restoration by raising money to do key improvements that will get it into a condition that can attract a buyer, a private developer, who can finish its restoration and operate the building long term. He said the previous owner gave him names of local people interested in contributing to the project, and he has information that one potential donor is interested in building naming rights. My goal is to renovate the building and not have a long-term commitment to the building, he said, adding that if a buyer doesn't emerge once some key renovations are made, then his organization will deal with that and look at continuing fundraising and renovations in phases. Porter said a 16-story building in downtown Birmingham, Alabama, where he lived for about 20 years, followed that same pattern successfully, and the group eventually finished its restoration over several years, raising the funds and completing a few floors at a time. Bressey was built in 1917 with First National Bank on the ground floor, and offices filled the rest of the tower that was finally closed in 2005 by the Louisville-based owners, Forked Group, which ended up with a downtown icon in 1993 when it bought WIAI. The corporation spun off Bressey into a separate limited liability corporation, Land Corporation of Danville. Porter said Forked Group donated the whole corporation to his organization. This will be the third project for Historic Restoration Incorporated, which obtained its 501c3 status in 2015. Porter said the organization is about 2.5 years into renovating an 18,000-square-foot, 19-room hotel building in Fayette, which houses his office and is about half the size of Bressey Tower. And his organization is also working on a 1940s church building. Porter, who has an undergraduate degree in banking and graduate degree in public administration, said his dad is a general contractor, so he's been around the construction industry his whole life. After Wells Fargo cut about 7,000 jobs, Porter said he took a buyout offer and moved from Birmingham back to his hometown of Fayette, opened an antique store, and started the nonprofit organization for small projects. And now, Historic Restorations has moved to larger ones. He said in general in the South, most successful restorations of buildings like Bressey are mixed-use projects, condos for sale along with apartments for rent and ground floor commercial. So that's where he could see this project going. Porter said he studied the Danville area, and he's confident there are people on the upper end of the wealth spectrum who have the financial ability to make this project happen, as well as big companies like Quaker, Alcoa, and others that can donate money for the possible bonus of tax credits. He said there are national programs like Historic Tax Credits and the National Trust for Historic Preservation that can entice donations or provide grants to defray costs. Our next article, also here in the News Gazette, is called Football Game Should Be a Sea of Pink, Not Purple. Don't expect to see much purple in the stands when the Oakwood Comets football team takes on the Georgetown Ridge Farm Buffaloes on Friday. Fans on both sides of the gridiron will swap their school color attire for pink for the fourth annual Paint the Field Pink game to honor and remember those battling cancer. The event, sponsored by the Comet Power of Pink, includes a raffle for a limited edition Pink Yeti cooler and a silent auction for an array of gift baskets. People can purchase pink and purple Comets hats and ear warmers. They can also purchase Amy Jo's popcorn, produced by Dale Wise. All proceeds will benefit families and staff members in the Oakwood School District who are battling cancer. The Comet Power of Pink was formed in 2014 by 1993 Oakwood alumni Trisha Keith, Beth Owens, Amanda Wells, and Amanda Sperry. The women created the group to support their classmate and friend Amy Wise of Oakwood and her family, husband Dale, and the couple's two children during her second battle with breast cancer. She died in January 2016. Though the event was started in her classmates' honor, Keith said, it also aims to honor all area folks who are battling cancer or who lost their battle. We lost another member of our community earlier this year, Keith said, referring to Dorenda Curry of Fithian. She was one of our football moms, and she was a friend to all of us. It was another hard hit for the community. Keith said the effort has raised thousands of dollars thanks to overwhelming support from Oakwood schools, the community, as well as the schools and towns of the rival football teams. It hasn't mattered what school they've played, she said. They've all joined in with us. It's been awesome. We've been able to make 9 separate donations, Keith continued. There are no questions asked. They may have to travel for treatment or have a family member go with them. There's sometimes a loss of work. It's not a one-time gift, either. If we have a family who has had to continue to fight, we have no problem giving them a donation as long as they need help. Dale Wise said his wife and family were so appreciative of the outpouring of support when they were on the receiving end, and it's heartwarming to see it continue. It's what she would have done, to help someone else, he said. Now, Wise and his children enjoy giving back. For the past 2 years, he has grown Amy Jo's popcorn on a 4.5-acre plot, packaged it and sold it to a few movie theaters and kettle corn companies, an idea that stemmed from Amy's interest in selling the popcorn, which the family enjoyed at area events. His daughter and son helped design the labels. Last year, he provided popcorn in jars for the Paint the Field Pink event, and all proceeds went to the Comet Power of Pink Fund. We did a lot more than I ever anticipated, Wise said, adding that they sold at least 300 jars altogether, including 200 at the game. He hopes to do even more this year. This all started with her comment, "Hey, this would be a good idea," he said. I think it's a good way to tie in with the event and just to give back for everything. Our next piece is from the Commercial News and is called Festival Countdown. Tickets go on sale Friday for holiday event. The doors will open onto a magical world of holiday cheer on November 11th, just 1 month from today. Tickets go on sale at 10 a.m. Friday for special events at the 21st Festival of Trees, presented by Presence United Samaritans Medical Center. The event will be November 11th through 15th at the David S. Palmer Arena at 100 West Main Street, with the theme Light the Way. The Festival of Trees is a magical way to start the holiday season with something special for everyone, said Angie Lozelle, a regional event officer for Presence Health Foundation. Our committees are working hard to make each and every special event exceptional again this year. Tickets to many of the favorite events sell out early, she said. Also, volunteers are needed the week prior to the festival to assist with setup, 2 days after the festival for teardown, and during the event itself. Volunteer chairperson Mary McMillan said the festival usually needs about 1,200 people to help set up, tear down, handle special events, and do other duties. This year, about 300 volunteers are still needed, she said. Lozelle noted the importance of volunteers, saying, "We couldn't begin to create this magical event without the time and talents of our community volunteers. Last year alone, volunteers devoted over 10,000 hours of planning, building, decorating, and working at the Festival of Trees." As for the special events, Lozelle said many favorites are returning, including the Children's Holiday Breakfast, the Ladies' Luncheon, the Princess Tea Party, the Crystal Ball, and the Family Pajama Party. New events this year are McDonald's Star Wars Lunch, two Danville Art League-sponsored wine and painting parties, and an Ugly Sweater Party. At the Star Wars party at 11:30 a.m. November 12th, children are invited to come dressed as their favorite Star Wars character and enjoy a lunch provided by McDonald's. Ronald McDonald will give guests a special magic show. Darth Vader and Stormtroopers will make a special appearance. After the lunch, the characters will spend some time at the festival. Lozelle said the Stormtroopers made an appearance several years ago, and they were mobbed by fans. Another popular event that's taking a new twist this year is the Glow Crazy Family Pajama Party, which will be from 8 to 10 p.m. November 11th. Activities include a glow-in-the-dark dance party, a breakfast bar, movies and popcorn, cookie decorating, special crafts, and a souvenir photo. The PJ party will be combined with Polar Express, when Mayor Scott Eisenhower will read the story to children. The limit is 325 children, Lozelle said. The Danville Art League's wine and painting party was so popular last year that it will be offered twice this year, from 2 to 4 p.m. November 11th and November 12th. Participants will be able to complete a painting while enjoying refreshments. Also new this year is the Ugly Sweater Party, which will be from 5:30 to 7 p.m. November 14th. This is an idea that seems to be popular with young people, Lozelle said. Here's a list of the special events, all with reserved seating except the Ugly Sweater Party. Children's Holiday Breakfast from 9 to 11 a.m. November 11th, $12.50 each. Princess Tea Party, November 11th from 1 to 3 p.m., $15 each. Wine and Painting Party in Room 154 on November 11th and 12th from 2 to 4 p.m., $35 each. Light the Night Pajama Party on November 11th from 8 to 10 p.m., $15 each. McDonald's Star Wars Lunch on November 12th from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., $12.50 each. The Crystal Ball on November 12th, 5:30 to 7 p.m., $15 each. Ladies' Luncheon, November 12th, from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., $35 each. Family Bingo Night in Room 154 on November 13th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., $12.50 each. Cheers to You Bingo, adults only, on November 14th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m., $25 each. Ugly Sweater Party, November 14th, from 7 to 9 p.m., $20 each, general admission for ages 21 and older. Free events include the Night of Lights Parade on November 11th, starting at 5:30 p.m. at Williams and Vermilion Streets and ending at the arena. Free admission from 6 to 8 p.m. with non-perishable food donation. Family Day, November 12th, from 12 to 7 p.m., children are free with a paying adult. The Polar Express and a Walk Through the North Pole, student tours, on November 14th and 15th, from 8:30 a.m. to noon, and this is for students only. Children's Day Extravaganza, sponsored by Lowe's Home Improvement, on November 11th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. A free macaroni soup family-friendly concert will take place on the stage at 1 p.m. and a magic and ventriloquist show at 2 and at 4 p.m. Veterans and military personnel will be admitted free on December 12th. The Festival of Trees benefits the outreach programs of Presence United Samaritans Medical Center, including I Sing the Body Electric, the Halo Project, Faith in Action, and Young Women and Men Aware. Platinum sponsor for this year's Festival of Trees is the Julius W. Hegler II Foundation, and diamond sponsor is Iroquois Federal. To find out about volunteer opportunities and to sign up, you can call 213-4750 to speak with the Festival of Trees volunteer chairperson, Mary McMillan. Tickets may be purchased in person or online at the David S. Palmer Arena, palmerarena.com, or online at www.presencehealth.org/festivaloftrees, or by phone at 877-772-5425. Our next article from the Commercial News is called Committee Discusses Vacant Lot Sales. Danville City and Land Bank officials are in agreement. They want vacant property sold to people who are going to make neighborhoods better, not worse, than they are today. We'll take great care of the lots, said Vermilion County Land Bank Executive Director Pat O'Shaughnessy, adding that they don't want to put city-owned vacant lots back in the hands of slumlords or people who won't take care of them. The City Council's Public Works Committee Tuesday night discussed a tentative agreement that the Land Bank Board is expected to act on Thursday night, and then the full City Council next week, that would allow the Land Bank to market vacant city-owned lots and sell them. The Land Bank will confirm any buyer is in good standing with the City and that they do not have active property maintenance cases, outstanding fees, fines, or code violations. Buyers also will be required to state plans for the lot prior to conveyance. This is what the land bank was built for, O'Shaughnessy said about helping the city put lots back on the tax rolls. O'Shaughnessy said they plan to talk to neighbors first, going one-on-one and door-to-door, in addition to using yard, realtor-type signs, and also flyers to inform possibly interested people about the city selling vacant properties it's acquired over the years. Ward 2 Alderman Rick Strebing said he's glad the city is finally moving forward and getting rid of lots. Also Tuesday, the committee heard from Mayor Scott Eisenhower about Bressie Tower. He said city officials had a meeting a month ago with Land Company of Danville officials about concerns stemming from the summer about terracotta pieces falling from the 12-story building more frequently and from higher than the third floor. An additional protective system around the building was discussed, Eisenhower said. He said he was surprised to learn this past weekend the building had been donated to Historic Restorations Incorporated of Alabama. City officials have not seen any closing documents yet. Eisenhower's very cautious of not finding any financial information on the two-year-old Alabama nonprofit organization, not having outreach from it yet, and also having First Corbin Financial Corporation in Kentucky being another corporation that dumps and runs away from a building in the city when it has the financial means to improve or remove the building. He said the city will continue to pursue subsidiary Land Company of Danville on all expenses relating to the building so far that taxpayers have incurred. Alderman Tuesday night also talked tax levy and budget scenarios, which included a 20-year plan to pay the city's pension debt, with some taxpayers paying more in a public safety fee and less in property taxes, or vice versa. In other business, the committee heard about expenses the city's incurred to start work on a boardwalk trail at the riverfront area near the David S. Palmer Arena. It's time now to read our area obituaries, and we'll begin with those listed in the News Gazette. Donald Joseph Flynn, 84, of Danville, passed away on Saturday, October 7th at his home, with his wife by his side. Per his request, Don will be cremated and a short memorial visitation will be held at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East Williams Street in Danville, from 2 to 4 p.m. Thursday, October 12th. His eulogy will be read at 4 p.m. by his longtime friend, Bob Rogers, and some memories shared by his family. There will be no graveside services, and per Don's request, a small portion of his ashes will be taken to Wrigley Field in Chicago by his grandsons, Chris Cope and Brian Flynn, who shared his great love and loyalty to the Cubs and attended many games together. Adelaide Henning, 81, of Tucson, Arizona, formerly of Hoopston, died on Friday, October 6th at Banner University Medical Center. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Blurton Funeral Home at 309 East Washington Street, Hoopston. Phyllis Pruitt, 73, of Hoopston, died at 3:50 p.m. Sunday, October 8th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Friday at Anderson Funeral Home at 427 East Main Street in Hoopston, with Pastor Brian King officiating. Burial will be in Floral Hills Cemetery in Hoopston. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home. Now we'll continue with obituaries from the commercial news. Verla May Verhoeven, 80, went to be with her Lord and Savior at 12:55 p.m. Wednesday, August 9th. She was born in Danville, Illinois, to Lucille and William Daniels. There is no burial information listed. Evelyn Lucas passed over August 27th to join her beloved late husband, Lloyd R. Lucas. She was surrounded by her loving family in McKinney, Texas. She and her husband Lloyd settled in Danville in 1948 and raised their family. You may join the family for a celebration of Evelyn's life from 2 to 5 p.m. Saturday, October 21st at 3805 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Flowers may be sent to 3805 North Vermilion or donations made to DAC Foundation, 2000 East Main Street, Danville, Illinois, 61832, care of Evelyn Lucas Scholarship. Robert E. Bryant, Sr., 77, of Milford, passed away Monday, October 9th at Riverside Medical Center in Kankakee. He was born in Danville, the son of Eugene Ellis and Lucille Marie Harper Bryant, Sr. His visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, October 13th at the Knapp Funeral Home in Milford. Cremation rites will be accorded after the visitation and burial will be held at a later date in Maple Grove Cemetery at Milford. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. John E. Sabalaski, 84, of Westville, passed away shortly before noon, Friday, October 6th, surrounded by family at Presence USMC in Danville, Illinois. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Friday, October 13th at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel at 414 South State Street in Westville, with the rosary being prayed starting at 3:30 p.m. prior to visitation. A funeral mass will be offered at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 14th at St. Mary's Catholic Church at 231 North State Street in Westville, with Father Timothy Sope officiating. Interment will immediately follow at St. Peter and Paul Cemetery in Westville, with military honors conducted by the Westville American Legion Post 51. Now we'll turn to VermilionCountyFirst.com for some more local news. Here we have an article called Danville Mayor Floats Pension Debt Payment Plan. Danville Mayor Scott Eisenhower has floated a plan that would pay off the city's $105 million pension debt over the next 20 years. His proposal notes Danville is currently using property taxes and a police and fire pension fee to fund the police and fire pension debt. So is there a way to use those same two revenue sources, and only those two revenue sources, and do it in a way for those who are paying more in property tax to pay less in the public safety pension fee, and vice versa? Those not paying as much in property tax would pay more in a public safety pension fee, said Eisenhower. The mayor outlined his proposal during a city council committee meeting last evening. He gave an example of how the proposal could impact a homeowner. If you have an EAV, equalized assessed value of your home, somewhere, let's say in the $8,000 range, then you would have a property tax increase of approximately 10% from what you had a year ago, but then you would also have a public safety pension fee increase where the total would be somewhere around, let's say, $110 for a total increase over a year ago. But it would eliminate the $96 that you're paying in the public safety pension fee now, plus whatever the past payment in your property tax was. The mayor noted a home with a fair market value of $60,000 with an assessed value of $20,000 without any exemptions would see the property owner pay $30 more under his proposal. That homeowner would also pay $25 for the public safety pension fee instead of the current $8 a month fee. City Council Member Ricky Williams Jr. said he just wants to make it as fair as possible. And Williams adds, having seniors pay $10.75 more a month is not outrageous. But Alderman Mike O'Kane says it may be hard to swallow for people living in rental property if they end up having to pay more. Next, we'll look at the community calendar. Coming up on October 15th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Catlin Historical Society will be hosting a ham and bean dinner on the Catlin Heritage Museum grounds. Menu includes ham and beans, chili, hot dogs, barbecue, applesauce, dessert, and drink. Free will donations are accepted. Looking ahead a little further, we have an event on October 21st from 4 to 7 p.m., the Union Corner United Methodist Church at 14158 Perrysville Road, Danville, will be serving a chili and vegetable soup supper along with hot dogs, barbecue, desserts, and drinks. Free will offering accepted. We'll conclude with a column called Only a Few Perfect Apples Remain. This is written by Donald Richter, whose column appears every other week in the Commercial News. He is a member of the Vermilion County Museum Board. The old Grimes golden trees in the orchard are about gone, but they certainly had their fans in the neighborhood. Myrtle Monroe would carefully wrap the Grimes apples in newspaper and store them in a cool place. When she unwrapped them, they were still fine for winter pies in January and February. Myrt, that is what everyone called her, was born in 1891, and she knew a thing or two about apples. The Grimes was her favorite, and she certainly put them to good use. Perhaps no one appreciated the homely-looking apple more than Herb Thomas. He observed the Grimes was the only apple that truly tasted like an apple. Each autumn he would make apple butter at his home in Vermilion County on what was known as the Conkeytown Bluffs in pioneer times. His recipe for apple butter was 4 bushels of Grimes Golden, a bushel of Yellow Delicious, a bushel of Macintosh, and 4 gallons of cider. Each year when he made the butter, it was a community event. Nellie Jane Shepherd was another person who preferred the Grimes. She would pick them when they were nearly ripe and then lay them out to finish ripening. The Grimes have a tendency to fall off the tree when they get ripe. Nellie Jane baked a pie for me with apples from one of my Grimes trees, and it might have come straight from heaven because it had a heavenly taste. She was a whiz of a pie maker, and her homemade crust added to the wonderful finished product. Grimes has always been my favorite apple. It has a unique taste and a distinctive aroma. The apples will never win a beauty contest. They are often smaller than commercial apples, and they squat on their flat bottom, but they are survivors. There was an ancient Grimes tree on the Henderson Place in Vance Township that must have been the last soldier in an old orchard. By the 1970s, when it finally succumbed, it was surrounded by raspberry briars and brush. But until it died, the old tree would produce a few tasty apples for anyone fortunate enough to find them before the squirrels made a harvest. New varieties of apples are introduced nearly every year. On a recent visit to Minnesota, I was introduced to the Sweet Tango. It was developed by the University of Minnesota a few years ago and is a very good sweet apple. It is also attractive with its perfect apple shape and attractive blemish-free skin. It has been described as the perfect fall apple, but I still prefer the old homely Grimes. This has been Sheila Lammers with readings from the Commercial News for Vermilion County. I look forward to reading with you again soon, and I hope you have a great day.